Detroit Beard Collective is a proud sponsor of Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by SlackJawPunks.com.
Guys, tired of trying to make that burly beard of yours look and smell good? Then check this out. Straight out of the Motor City, where they know a thing or two about being tough, comes Detroit Beard Collective, specializing in making that facial hair look good with products like beard butter, beard oils and soaps, specialty combs, and so much more. Come check out the line today at DetroitBeardCollective.com. DBC takes pride in using Detroit and Michigan-based companies and ingredients in all aspects of their product development and manufacturing as they continue to build Detroit's premier grooming company. Even burly dudes like to look and smell good, and DBC will make that happen. Do yourself and your badass beard a favor and log on to DetroitBeardCollective.com and check out all the amazing products they offer. And when you're ready to check out, use promo code SJPDBC to receive 10% off. Detroit Beard Collective, cleaning this world up one beard at a time.
And welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. It is Tim Ellis and Brad Blair and the entire crew back inside, ready to bring you another amazing show from the world of the weird and the where creepy is cool. That's what we like to say.
That's right. Creepy yes. is cool.
Where creepy is cool inside the Creaking Door. So come on in and be creepy with us. And here we are, Brad. And the good news is you, I, and the entire crew, we survived another St. Patrick's Day.
Apparently so.
Yeah, we're all here anyway.
Everyone that's accounted for anyway. Yeah. So yeah, and it's beautiful. Beautiful weekend for it, falling on a Friday. I kind of wondered if everybody would make it through.
Right.
But here we are.
So far, so good.
Beautiful start to the spring season, hopefully.
And as far as we know, we haven't heard any reports from down the road in the Motor City in Detroit, where it's the home of our mother company, SlackJawPunks.com. No sights of the Nain Rouge on St. Patrick's Day.
No, that's always a good sign.
Yes, it is.
That's always a good sign. The infamous Nain Rouge of Detroit.
Yeah, if you don't know anything about Nain Rouge, look them up. Or you know what? Maybe in the closing segment of today, maybe we can talk about the Nain Rouge.
That'd be good.
A little bit. There we go. Maybe that's what we'll do instead of mailbag. We'll see. We'll play by ear. That's what's fun about owning our own show. We can do whatever we want, whenever we want.
Yeah.
Kinda.
Something like that.
Yeah, but here we are back inside the studio. Happy to be with you on this post-St. Patty's Day, and we've got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to be talking about something, a subject matter we have not talked about yet, but it's a very famous location known as the Stanley Hotel.
Right. Now, I've been out there several times. You have not made
it
yet,
have
you?
I feel ashamed.
Wow, you should be, as you should.
I do.
Several times. In fact, ironically enough, the last time I was out there was a year ago this weekend.
Oh, really?
I celebrated St. Patty's Day at the Stanley Hotel.
Oh, do you remember it?
I do. Okay. Because and the only reason why is because I was there working the Nick Groff tour.
That's right, yes.
So it was, which is great, but that was the weekend that I actually met today's guest, Mr. Connor Randall.
All right.
So, yeah, and it's taken us a year to get around to booking him onto the show.
I know,
so
we've been talking about it since then.
We have, but what an amazing location, the history of that place, and of course, if you're not familiar with it, this is the hotel that Stephen King based The Shining on.
Correct.
Which is probably its biggest boost to infamy, if you want to call it that.
You bet.
But it's really a beautiful place and a beautiful location. And I myself have had, I guess, what I think may have been paranormal experiences.
I remember you telling me that.
It was very strange. Yeah, we've had one time we stayed, the wife and I had the covers pulled off of us at night, had the heat cranked up in the morning, and she actually had clothes thrown on the floor when she got out of the shower the next day. I was already down in the coffee area.
Really?
So, yeah, just strange.
I didn't know
things.
About that one. I knew about the other two.
And our neighboring tenants, if you will, in the next room also reported having a door open and hearing footsteps footsteps walk through their room in the middle of the night.
Nice.
So
the Stanley Hotel.
And that's the thing. That's not something off the charts there by any means.
No,
this kind of thing happens. And we're going to have so happy to have Connor in with us tonight to tell us more about it.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to hearing some very up close and personal more stories, just like you shared, Brad, about the infamous Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado. And we'll be talking with him coming up on the other part of this show. But right now, it is time for us to jump into the segment we love to call Parent News, where we dig into a little bit deeper into the strange world in which we live. What do you got, sir?
Let's start her off with aliens invading the UK.
Okay, let's do that.
Why wouldn't
we? Sounds interesting.
Indeed. Aliens suddenly taking a new interest in the renowned paranormal hotspot of West County, England. It's kind of looking that way, apparently, says reports coming out lately. Regional media have reported an upsurge in sightings and odd events in the part of the country known for its mysterious happenings, legends, and crop circles. Of course, allegedly all caused by alien visitors. Somerset Live reports that there have been two UFO sightings just weeks after claims of an alien being was seen in country town Yeovil in Somerset.
So the actual being.
The actual alien being.
Was seen.
Yes.
Okay.
But it gets better.
Yeah.
The website said in December, we had an alien spotted wearing a Stetson hat near Yeovil College. Aliens love their Stetsons.
Well, they're very fashionable people. They don't get enough credit, I don't think.
Now, two more possible unexplained sightings have been reported. Sadly, no alien drawings of them this time. In another report to UFO Stalker, an unnamed witness said, I didn't see anything at the time we took the picture, but later, near Lysander Road, the sun was pretty bright, so we couldn't see anything at the time. We noticed it on the photo when we got home, a large metallic object. I think the direction of the object was west. The person provided video footage caught by static camera in his garden. This is another sighting here. They're showing a picture of it. It looks, you can't tell what it is. You can't tell. It's something in the air. The witness said in their report, the video footage shows a row of what appears to be eight lights traveling in an east to southeasterly direction. I was not actually present at the time of the event. Strange events have also been reported in Gloucester. Gloucester?
God bless you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Gloucester?
Gloucester, I think.
I love the way they sound when people who know how to pronounce these.
Then it sounds cool.
It just does
sound like idiots.
Exactly.
All right, so watch for aliens and Stetson hats. That's their new giveaway now.
Aliens in Europe.
All right.
England, the West England coast.
Good to know.
Yes, it is.
All right, my first story of this episode is the ghost that caused an epic tumble. Bum, bum, bum. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, we will be sharing. There's video of this. We'll be sharing it on our Facebook page once this show is available online. The odd video circulating online allegedly shows a boy being dramatically attacked by a ghost, although many observers suspect that it might be a hoax, really. Aside from the implication that the footage comes from a security camera, there's no other information provided with the video, leaving viewers to come up with their own theories, hence why we will post it and allow our listeners to come up with your own theories. In the somewhat spooky scene, and then they put some spooky music behind it, so it's creepy at first, the boy can be seen taking a book off a shelf. He just walks into this room, no reason. I'm sitting here looking at this room. I'm like, why would this room have a security camera, first of all?
Mm-hmm.
It's got like two shelves and a few books.
Often a dead giveaway.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And it's at that moment, the door behind him appears to open up as he's looking at the book he grabbed. And then he appears to be shoved unsuspectingly to the ground. It is in that moment that makes the footage both highly suspicious and, well, a little chuckle worthy, if you will, as the boy starts to wildly flail and flops in a fashion reminiscent of a poor trained professional wrestler, says the write-up. And I've seen the video, and even the fall itself is not convincing.
You obviously have never been attacked by a ghost.
I haven't yet, so that's why I'm kind of a little remiss about
give the boy some credit
getting too critical on this poor kid, because you're right, I have not. But this video shows me what to expect if it does happen. Go to our Facebook page and you can check this video out and give us your feedback on what you think happened to this kid. That's my story.
All right.
And I'm sticking to it.
Well, Washington werewolves taking a sad turn in this next story. It actually is a sad story. This is more true crime. A Washington state man, this coming from the New York Post, who claimed to be a werewolf was arrested on Sunday for stabbing his mom to death.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Shan Smith, 29, told police he killed his mom because she is a vampire.
So he's a werewolf and
she's
a vampire.
Werewolf. She's a vampire. I don't know how she spawned a werewolf being a vampire bloodline, but that's beside the point. This gets a little messed up here. So
you're reading deep into it.
I am. On that Sunday afternoon, police received a call from Smith rambling about werewolves and vampires from a home in Bellingham, Washington. Authorities arrived to find his mother, 57-year-old Aurora Smith, dead from stab wounds. A knife was found at the crime scene and Smith was taken into custody. Bellingham police tweeted on Sunday that there was also a sexual motivation for the stabbing.
Oh.
Yeah, an autopsy has been scheduled to determine if the victim had been sexually assaulted. The defendant admitted to police that he'd been using a lot of meth recently. Really?
Dead giveaway.
Uh-huh. Which is the reason for the voices in his head, Chief Criminal Deputy Prosecutor Eric Richley said at Smith's arraignment on Monday. Smith was charged with second-degree murder. His bail was set at $1 million.
Wow, this guy needs to go away forever.
I think so. So, unfortunately, another, I know we'd had some drug-related zombie incidents.
Yes.
In the past that we've reported on.
Bath salts, I think, wasn't it, or
something? Yeah, bath salts in there, and now we've got meth-created werewolves.
Well, my final story of the night is going to kind of be along the lines of werewolves, or maybe more along the lines of what we know as the Michigan Dogman legend.
Excellent.
But this one's in Canada, or her wonderful neighbors to the north. A Canadian woman on her way to work was astounded when she spotted a pair of black wolves running on the highway alongside her car. Rhonda Miller wasn't quite sure what she was seeing as she approached the dark blur on the side of the road, first suspecting that it might have been a person, then possibly a bear because of the size. However, when she realized that the creature was a large black wolf and that there were two of them running, the other one was about 30, 40 yards ahead of the first one, Miller had an eerie reaction. She says, "My body immediately became afraid," she told the CBC News. "I was so struck by the size of their heads and their jaws." She managed to actually capture the scene with her cell phone and produce some pretty remarkable footage of the wolves next to her car. She was driving somewhere between 25 and 35 miles per hour. We'll actually, again, show this video on our Facebook page so you can go check it out for yourself. The incredible display combined with the considerable size of the creatures makes them appear rather monstrous, especially when they turn their heads and look at Miller filming them, and you actually see it. And that's what the experts about this say. They say, first of all, the size. Second of all, for two of them to be running alone like this instead of in a pack, and they hardly ever approach the road. And when they see something coming, they're very skittish animals, and they'll run off. These two creatures are by themselves running up this road, and as she's passing them, they literally, without breaking stride, turn and look at her and then just keep running. It's crazy.
I love the dog, man. Those stories are so creepy.
They really are.
So much scarier than a Bigfoot encounter, to me.
Yeah, I would agree.
I would agree. The whole dog, man, werewolf genre just, yeah.
Well,
sends a shiver down your spine, and you don't realize how often these are reported until you pick up a book by Linda Godfrey or someone on the Dogman Reports, but they're very widespread, especially throughout the Midwest.
Yeah, and this story, I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't get picked up maybe by Linda or someone who reports on the Dogman, because the sounds of this report is more along the lines of what we've read about Dogman reports as opposed to a pack of wolves.
Right.
I mean, this is so strange, their personalities and how they react in this video. And even the experts are saying this is not normal.
I haven't seen this yet. I'm going to have to pull this up when we get out of studio here.
Yeah, I'll let you see it. It's pretty darn cool. And yeah, and you and I even said, Brad, that it's a good thing we probably didn't know about the Dogman legend when we were kids growing up here in northern Michigan, because we probably never would have went into the woods as kids.
No, absolutely not.
Because even as adults, it's downright creepy.
Yeah.
All right, there we go. That is our Paranews segment. It's time for us to take our first break. And when we come back, our guest coming up,
Connor Randall from the formerly of the Stanley Hotel.
All right.
Great stories.
He's got great stories from the Stanley Hotel, and he has a phenomenal story, personal story, about his adventures in life as well.
Mm-hmm.
So looking forward to talking to Connor. That's coming up next right here inside the creaking door where creepy is cool. Powered by slackjawpunks.com. Do you love your horror films, comic books, and TV shows served up with a side of what the f***? Then we have the place for you.
Slackjaw Punks!
Yeah, slackjawpunks.com. We dare you to check them out. A podcast that focuses on all the new horror films, comic books, and TV shows, and interviews with the authors and directors, but covered only the way the guys from
Slackjaw Punks
can do it. Plus, you can enjoy written commentary on all of the new stuff, too, from a whole slew of staff writers. So stop wasting time and check it out.
Slackjaw Punks!
Slackjawpunks.com. Serving it up with a side of what the f***? And welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio with Tim Ellis and Brad Blair. And Brad, a gentleman, as you had alluded to in the first part of the show, someone who you met almost a year to the day.
A year ago this weekend, yeah. I was out at the Stanley Hotel working as part of the Nick Groff tour out there. And yeah, great time. As I said, beautiful place. Nothing like The Shining. although obviously that's where it got some of its notoriety from. But yeah, just an amazing time, amazing weekend with great people.
It's one of those storylines that is always out there in the world of the paranormal. People know about the Stanley. A lot of people like myself, and again, I'm almost ashamed to admit it, haven't made it there yet. But we have got a gentleman inside the creaking door with us who can tell us all about it. He's up and close and personal with the Stanley Hotel. We'd like to welcome inside the creaking door for the first time, Mr. Connor Randall. Connor, good afternoon. Thank you for being with us, sir.
Good afternoon, sirs. Thanks so much for having me. I'm honored to be on.
It is our honor, our pleasure. I know we've tried for a while now. A couple times it came very close, then it didn't. But here we are. So thank you for being patient with us and getting inside with us. And so where are you coming to us from now? Do you live right in Estes Park, or where are you?
I live in a town called Arvada, just outside of Boulder, Colorado.
Okay.
So I'm about an hour away from the hotel.
Okay, yeah. Very good. And what's exciting about your story, and this is why we're happy to have you in, is you've almost got two different stories to tell. One is your own personal journey, which does tie into the Stanley Hotel, but it's a whole other story in itself, which is why you feel so connected to the world, to the afterlife, if you will, that other side. And then there's the story of how well you know the Stanley Hotel. So we've got about a half hour here to just sit down with you and really dig into all this. So let's get at it, man. First of all, Connor, let's start on a personal side with your personal journey and what you've gone through, starting at a very, very young age.
Sure. Yeah, you know, I've got a unique story in terms of the paranormal, and there is a connection there. But really, my story starts back when I was born with cardiomyopathy. I am a heart transplant recipient, and I've had two heart transplants. So it's been a lot. The last one was just over 10 years ago.
Wow.
But I'm feeling fantastic right now. I was born with, like I said, with cardiomyopathy. Basically, my heart muscle wasn't growing with me, and so I was put on the waiting list for a heart transplant, and I became one of the very first infant heart transplants ever. I waited on the list for 3 months, received my new heart on Mother's Day of 1992, and then went on and you know, lived a relatively normal childhood. I sort of became a poster child for organ donation.
Sure.
And it was kind of like, you know, he's doing fantastically well, and I really was. And then when I was around 11 years old, I ran into some issues with rejection, which is a risk with any transplanted organ, where basically your immune system recognizes the transplanted heart as a foreign object and attacks, and it got worse and worse. And after a year of treatments, they put me back on the waiting list, and I waited for another just over 13 months, and that was around middle school age. And so really, I missed middle school, which, you know, honestly, if there's a time of life to miss, I guess looking back.
yeah, that'd be a good call.
right?
Yeah.
And then I received my new heart in July of 2005, and now I'm 11 years out, and I feel fantastic. Life's good. The prognosis is good. And, yeah, I've been through a lot of medical difficulties that, you know, sort of the cards I was dealt, but life's good, and I really appreciate it a lot more, you know?
Excellent.
So,
yeah, I could only imagine how that kind of gives you maybe a different look on life, you know, than the average person who hasn't gone through that. Now, is there... Now that you're in your adult age and, you know, hopefully the heart is done growing, is there still a concern about the muscle not growing with you?
No. Everything looks fantastic. They see me having this for the rest of my long life. And it's, yeah, you know, my heart's older than me. I received my heart from a 21-year-old male when I was just 13. And so, you know, it's a big heart. And I kind of joked, you know, when I woke up, my dad, he leaned over and he said, you know, how do you feel? And I said, I feel great. I don't have to worry about my heart anymore. And it's right. And you know, that's part of the whole thing with transplants. It's like, you know, you're able to go out and live a normal life. I go to the hospital once every 6 months for checkups and take medicines every day, and that's really about it. And it's kind of like, oh, you know, a lot of people are like, I would have no idea. And it's like, well, that's kind of the point. You know, your transplant enables you to go out and do what you can, and you got to be really thankful to the donors and their families. And yeah, life's good.
Ah, so let's talk about how this starts tying you in with the Stanley Hotel up in Estes Park.
Sure. You know, I have had, and really a lot of it stemmed from when I was in the hospital and around, you know, 2004, 2005, when I was really dealing with the brunt of my medical illness there. I was basically watching a lot of Ghost Hunters, and that was, in a lot of respects, sort of part of the show's heyday as well, when it was just getting off the ground.
Sure.
And you know, life was awesome, and in that respect, that I was able to sort of have that escape there and look at sort of what I wanted to be doing with my own life, and I got into the paranormal through that TV show, as so many other people, especially in my generation, have. And then, you know, I've looked around for different sister groups and found the TAPS family group for Colorado and Wyoming here, and I applied. You know, a couple of years later when I was feeling a lot better, and I told them I was 18, I kind of, a little bit of a white lie. I was actually only 17. And they, for some reason, picked me, and then I wandered around doing a lot of residential cases that would come in through TAPS around this area of the country. And then they would have these things called Beyond Reality events. You guys might remember those.
Yeah, absolutely.
They would come out to the Stanley Hotel, and I got to go with my TAPS family group and kind of help out. And, you know, it's funny, it wasn't the very first time I went to the Stanley. The first time I went to the Stanley was actually for a children's hospital fundraiser when I was 10 years old. And I was one of the little kids who was, you know, there with Children's Hospital, and it was like a wine fundraiser. And I went to the Stanley, and that was the first kick where I'm like, this is a really fascinating place. And you sort of get bitten by this little Stanley bug, you know, and I just started reading into it way back when. And then when I was later on in my life able to connect it through sort of the TAPS family group that I've been a part of and go as an investigator, I fell in love with it even more. I got to know the investigator at the time who worked there. Her name was Callie. I'm not sure if you guys ever have met her. And she sort of took me under her wing and asked me to come up and start doing tours. I went up there for spring break, and then I stayed up there for a summer and did tours and fell into it totally from there on out. So, yeah, it's been around my life for a long time, and so it's right in my backyard, so I'm lucky.
Yeah, even better, and it's like it came full circle for you, which, you know, you see patterns of that in people's lives all the time, where you had a connection as a child, and then somehow as an adult it comes all the way back around, and it sounds like that's what happened for you with the Stanley. So that's really cool in that aspect.
Yeah. And then, you know, I got the coolest job title in the world for a few years there. I was a resident paranormal investigator at the Stanley Hotel.
That's awesome.
That's great. Yeah.
Along with a few of my friends. And we would go up for really off and on for 4 years. We would regularly go up, usually two or three times a week. And we would host these groups, and we would meet with these small groups of between 10 and 30 people, and we would sort of split them up. And honestly, the Stanley, they gave us keys, and they said, hey, you guys have fun. And we were able to take these members of the public out on these investigations for 5 or 6 hours and wander the grounds and really get to know the place really well. So in that respect, we were given a really unique opportunity to take an incredibly haunted location and have a long-term study of it, you know? It's been pretty cool.
For our listeners that aren't familiar with the backstory on the Stanley, can you give us a little bit of the history that leads up to these reported hauntings?
Sure. The Stanley Hotel is most famously, in a sense, also known as the Shining Hotel, in that it was the inspiration for Stephen King's The Shining. The historical background of the hotel goes back to 1909. The hotel was founded by a man named F.O. Stanley. He was an inventor, along with his identical twin brother, F.E. Stanley. They invented not only the Stanley steam car, which is what they're most well known for, but also the photographic dry plate, which was essentially a way to get pictures to process a lot faster back in the late 1800s. And they sold the patent to this device over to a man named George Eastman, who went on to found Kodak, of course. And they're essentially millionaires for their time. F.O. Stanley is living out in the New England area. One morning, he apparently wakes up and he starts coughing up blood. He gets diagnosed with tuberculosis, and his doctors recommend that he go out to the clean mountain air of Colorado. So he and his wife, Florida, pack up. They come out here. They apparently initially stayed in a hunting cabin that belonged to one of his doctors. Not very impressive, but apparently after a couple of months in that cabin, he was out jogging around the Estes Park area, feeling so much better. So we don't know if it was a misdiagnosis or what, but the point being, F.O. Stanley loved the place. He wanted to stick around there. And so he said, you know, hey, let's build a guest house. And of course, in typical wealthy F.O. Stanley fashion, he built the Stanley Hotel, an enormous complex. It's got three main buildings, 140 rooms, and they built it from 1907 to 1909. And the hotel had its grand opening ceremonies on July 4th of 1909, and it's been in operation ever since. Been going through some ups and downs, but it's a beautiful, magnificent place. And it's got a lot of interesting reports that go along with it. The thing is, you know, people would ask all the time, why? You know, why the Stanley Hotel? Why is it so haunted? And that's honestly an excellent question. I think the easy answer is to say that it's a very happy place. You know, it's on all these top 10 most haunted places in America list, you know, which who knows? But it is incredibly haunted, and I think it deserves to be on a lot of those lists. But then again, it's paired up with all these, you know, asylums and abandoned, you know, prisons and things like that that don't have a happy past, whereas the Stanley does. So maybe it's so haunted because people want to stick around there. It was a good time in their life. It was a summer vacation spot for the wealthy for a very long time. You know, maybe it's so haunted because of the rocks. It's allegedly built on limestone and quartz, though I've tried to look into geological indexes to figure out if that's actually the case, and I'm not entirely sure. Or maybe it's just got a certain vibe and something draws spirits to it, but all I know is they're absolutely there.
Well, I think what's so fascinating too, Connor, which you've had a chance to do, which for myself and Brad and other people listening who are been into the research side of this for many, many years, we don't often get a chance to return and return and return to the same location to compare our findings time after time after time again, like you've had a chance to do with the Stanley. So that's one in a million there, and that's pretty darn cool. That's an experience that most of us investigators would have loved to have had.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, and I definitely try not to take it for granted. You know, it's funny because you in some sense feel jealous of these people who get to travel around the country and do this and this and this, and maybe I'll get there one day, but I honestly felt incredibly lucky to have keys to this place and to be able to just walk in and document what I can, you know, and we would go in, you know, not under official capacities with the groups either. The hotel you know, you wanted to get your story straight. And we had to do sometimes some research on our own without members of the public. And I had a great team with me. Lisa Neihart was up there for a while with us. And then over the last couple of years, it's been Carl Pfeiffer, who a lot of people might know from Ghost Hunters Academy back in the day, and also Michelle Tate. Moved up here for a year and was on the team with us. And now the three of us are just the best of friends, and we text each other every day and keep in touch all the time. And the research is continuing. But yeah, definitely a unique opportunity.
Yeah, the Stanley itself, I would guess it almost has to be the most investigated location in the United States. I can't think of another place that has such continuous work going on it. You think of some of the asylums and some of these closed down prisons that have regular group events and have different things, but a lot of those are seasonal or just hit and miss different times. It seems like there's always something happening where there are people investigating the Stanley.
Right. Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And whether, you know, the management in this day and age wants it to be happening or not, I can almost guarantee you that every night there's got to be somebody staying there that's got an audio recorder or a K2 meter or something. Every single night.
That's one thing that struck me the first time that I spent the night at the Stanley, is just walking around the halls at night and people walking around with little digital recorders, audio recorders, cameras, just snapping pictures of nothing. And I'm just laughing. It was great. I wish I would have been doing that, but we were there with some friends, so we spent a little bit more time in the lounge than we probably should have. So.
Different spirits.
Yes.
Different spirits. Yeah. So unfortunately, Connor, your run as being the resident paranormal investigator there, and for anyone who used to come in with a group, those days are done. As almost a year ago now, the Stanley Hotel pulled the plug on all of that. How was that for you, pretty much on the inside of all this, to see this unfold and happen?
It was honestly pretty shocking. Yeah. I can tell you this, there was nothing that we were ever told by any manager or anything where it's like, hey, you guys are doing this wrong. You need to stop what you're doing. There was no disciplining, you know. It was very strange. It was as if, you know, and I tell people, they ask me, it's like, I really don't know. All I know is I got an email that said the management has made the decision to stop all paranormal, you know, activities at the hotel. And it was kind of like, well, that's a major bummer, because not only is this a job, you know. Michelle Tate moved up here from Texas specifically to spend that
oh,
year
wow.
up with us investigating, and she sort of uplifted her life, and yeah, really wasn't handled too well on management's part, and it was kind of a shock to a lot of us. It was as if they woke up one day and just said, hey, I think we should stop talking about the ghosts. There was pretty big backlash, because we came forward and there was, you know, things that we had to cancel, and there was paranormal groups and trying to book events and stuff like that, and I'm sure all these groups would want this to continue in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we respect their decision, and in a sense we're ready to move on to another place or something else, but you know, I still stop by the Stanley when I get a chance. I still love it there. It's one of my favorite places in the world and always will be. But in terms of official investigation, I think they're going through a big upheaval of trying to change the place. They're building new complexes and buildings. They just built a new center there. It's like a rehab center type place for, like, you know, I think it's for more like knee surgeries and stuff like that, you know, where there's a little complex there on the grounds that people can stay in. And then it's also just going through this thing where maybe they're trying to turn it into sort of a more classy business resort. And honestly, I don't think they really gave the time of day to realize that the spirits are really a big draw there. Kind of a strange decision. And, you know, they to their credit, once we released a statement saying, hey, there will no longer be paranormal investigations happening at the hotel, there was, it kind of went viral, you know,
as you
guys might have noticed.
Yeah.
And it just went all over the place. The hotel sort of came back and said, well, you know, we'll still have some ghost tours, you know. So from my understanding, I think you might be able to go up and go on a ghost tour. I cannot personally I don't want to say I can't recommend them, but I don't know exactly what they're talking about.
Right,
so,
right.
So who knows?
Well, I have to say, yeah. I've stayed out there three different times now. If it wasn't for the ghostly history of it, I never would have ended up there. It wouldn't have been on my travel list.
Yeah. I mean, the paranormal has become an industry in itself now, especially thanks to, you know, the TV show Ghost Hunters and blowing the doors off of, you know, the paranormal. And it was there before Ghost Hunters, but Ghost Hunters made it so mainstream that it's become an industry within itself. They are losing a chunk of money because of this. There's no doubt about it.
It's just whether they're making it up on the...
Right, exactly.
On the business traveler or whoever else mm-hmm. they're putting through there. It is a beautiful location. It's an amazing hotel, and I can't recommend it high enough. But yeah, right. this was definitely a slap in the face to the paranormal community, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're right too, Connor. I think it goes down to the way it was handled. It was so
abrupt,
yes, mm-hmm. and so quick that it almost was a slap in the face to the paranormal community, especially those people like you who worked it day in and day out. The big tours like Nick Groff and Amy Bruni with Strange Escapes and the other big ones that brought a lot of money to that place, and then all of a sudden to just say, you're not welcome here anymore. I mean, if you're gonna cancel it, that's fine. That's management's prerogative.
And you've had Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures. Film there.
Yeah.
They were all welcomed in through the years. So,
but
yeah.
they really should have taken time to spread it out. Say, hey, we're going to start getting away from this. Anyways, we could we could talk about this all day on how they should have handled it. And it is what it is. And but it will always have that history,
right.
No matter what.
Now let's talk about how fortunate you were those years that you were able to investigate there and some of the experiments that you guys worked on and some of the amazing results that you received from those experiments.
Yeah, of course. See, this is the exciting stuff. Here we go. like you said, we had a unique opportunity to spend day in and day out at this location. Now, a lot of the research that we were trying to get into, and we did get into over a while, was trying to document this over a long period of time. So we were trying to figure out, let's say, you know, given our unique opportunity here, if we could possibly figure out, hey, you know, when the temperature hits this number, or when the dew point hits this amount, or the humidity, or any time it's a rainy Tuesday and it's a full moon, you know, it's an active night. I unfortunately can't say that we reached any solid conclusions like that, where it's sort of like consistently, this is what causes the activity to happen, which in a sense is interesting in itself because it was pretty randomized in terms of the nights that we had that were really crazy. They would happen year-round at various intervals. I can say for sure one thing that was consistent is that the ghosts would show up when the group that we were with or the people that we were with were excited about them being there and about the ghosts, the prospect of the paranormal showing up. We always kind of joked because honestly, let's say, you know, we'd show up on a Thursday night and there would be, you know, I'd have 10 people with me for those 6 hours, members of the public going out, and I would, you know, for an hour talk about the basics of investigating the paranormal, and then we'd go around and explore and go on a ghost hunt. If there was one or two guys or women or whoever who were just not into it and you could clearly tell it from the outset, I would basically be able to say, hey, they're not going to show up tonight, you know? And in the strangest sense, if the group was into it, the ghosts would show up. Which brings into, you know, a whole other question where it's like they're feeding off of our own energy or our own...
Absolutely.
Things like that. Yeah. Which is interesting.
And as you know, too, Connor, you know, Brad and I have done our share of these type of tour ghost hunts, too. There always seems to be that one person that usually it's the boyfriend who got or the husband mm-hmm. who got dragged along and just doesn't want to be there, and you can read him from the start.
He's like 55 years old and he's standing in the back with his arms crossed.
Yeah, exactly.
So, the ghost buzzkill, man.
Yeah.
So we did notice that, and yeah, that's sort of the long-term result there. But then we got tired of asking the same questions over and over again, and the spirits got tired of it too.
Sure.
We used to tell people, you know, when you walk in, like, don't pretend like this is just a straight episode of a TV show and it's the first time people are going in there. Like, the spirits that are here, they have people every single night, like you were saying, asking them questions. So if you get up and you hold up a recorder and you say, what's your name? How old are you? You know, that is at least the 5,000th time that this ghost has been asked that question. So we started getting really unique with our questions, where we would sit there and be like, hey, do you like Neapolitan ice cream? You know, like things like that.
Right.
And maybe that's something that they want to talk about. Or, you know, hey, are you a Broncos fan? Maybe there's a spirit there who's been like, I haven't been able to talk about football for years. Here we go.
Yep.
So we started getting into that. And then we started getting into more unique ways to use the equipment that's typically used on paranormal investigations. Our most successful alternative method was definitely our usage of the spirit box. And I don't know if you've had a chance to watch any of the videos that we uploaded with that. I know Brad has been keeping in touch with some of that, but definitely the spirit box experiment was really intriguing for around 6 months straight there while we were using it. And basically what we would do is we thought, you know, the spirit box is, first of all, a controversial device, understandable, you know.
Absolutely.
It's something where it's very easy to write off, and trust me, we were just as skeptical as anybody else. I mean, we spent 80% of our time there telling people that their pictures were either dust or their breath because they're in the mountains and it's cold outside, you know. And so we were very suspicious of it. And at the same token, you also have a device here that seems to be yielding some results. So we said, let's explore this a little bit further. So what Carl, Michelle, and I did is we decided to isolate one person. So we said, okay, we'll have one person listening to the feed of the spirit box, and they will be totally unaware of the questions that are being asked outside in the room, because what we would do is we would have the person who was listening to the feed have total soundproof headphones on. I play drums, so I have my drummer's headphones that I use when I'm recording that cut out, I think it's 22 decibels of straight sound. They're about as soundproof as you can get.
Wow.
And then we would throw a blindfold on that person, and they would sit there and listen to the feed and say words that they were hearing come across the spirit box feed, and they started to correlate with the questions that we were asking in the room independently. And it got really weird after a while. There were, I don't know how to say this without being like, hey, you know, drug me. But I was, in for some reason, the person who had the best success listening to the spirit box feed. Michelle and Carl both had some really interesting results as well. And also, we'd throw it on members of the public as well who were investigating with us. And there were a lot of moments where it was like, hey, you know, that's interesting. But they would most often have me on because, for some reason, the ghosts would like to talk a little bit more frequently into the spirit box feed while I was listening to it. And honestly, over the 6 to 8 months that we were using that method, I probably logged in like 35 or 40 hours straight just sitting there listening to that spirit box feed. And you know, it's strange. In some respects, you know, you wonder how it happened. But in the more I'm thinking about it, the more it's like, you know, I am, in a sense, it requires a lot of trust. And that's why I invite anybody who's listening to absolutely try this method and give us your results. We had Adam Berry and Amy Bruni used it on their show Kindred Spirits, and it was in their first season that just came out, and they were, you know, hitting us up on Twitter like, hey, you know, this method is really working, so I'm happy it's getting out there now.
Nice.
I'm wondering how it works so well. And you know, if you think about it, a lot of the guys who are into old EVP research, you know, you have Radova and things like that, the idea being that if you have sort of an old reel-to-reel recorder or a tape recorder or something like that, that white noise might provide a medium that the spirit can manipulate into a structured sound, you know,
right.
With the rotation of the wheels and the sprockets and all that, you know, and maybe the spirit box is going along those same lines. I'm not sure. maybe it does. I think what might be the most likely explanation is that it's difficult to describe without sitting there, you know, for an hour or two just listening to a spirit box feed, but you sort of, you enter a meditative state, you know, especially being totally blocked off from the rest of your environment. And I was able to just sit there and sort of almost visualize the radio waves scanning through, and then these words would pop up. And I would most frequently hear them over the feed itself. Sometimes you would hear half a word and be like, this is what I think wanted to be completed, and I would say it out loud. The way I sort of tell people is like, imagine you're surfing and sort of visualize that and just, you know, hey, there's little like fish popping out of the water as you're riding that wave there. And you would say the words, and really frequently they would be oddly on with the questions that were being asked.
So. I think that's a great visual that you just painted there, and how it's like using a spirit box and, you know, the water, and then all of a sudden the fish pops up. But I agree with you too. You almost have to go into a hypnotic state because, God, that can drive you crazy sometimes too. That scanning over and over and over. Insane.
You know. Right, and we were lucky because up in Estes Park, I mean, it's up in the middle of the mountains, the hotel's up there, and there's not a lot of radio stations. And so it was also lucky in that respect that it was mostly white noise, right, with a few little blips here and there. If I use it down in Denver, it's a little bit different. But still, yeah.
And I think we've had that kind of that success living where we live up here in the UP of Michigan. We're not around a big metropolis area. So when we have worked with the spirit box, especially even outside of our town a little bit, we've had some good experiences that way.
We have. And we've had some interesting results. As you said, it's controversial. We can't take everything we hear and say it's gospel and this is a message from here and here. The fun thing that I found with the spirit box, especially on some of these group tours that you take through or group ghost hunts, you tend to always have one person that hears something coming through and they swear by it, and that tends to bring the rest of the group in on it, and it's there's always one in every crowd kind of thing. So for a dead night, that can really pick things up on an investigation.
It helps, that's for sure.
It certainly can. And you know, on one token, it's like, well, it gets somebody excited when maybe it's nothing, but on the other hand, I'd argue that that's not necessarily a bad thing, because if the energy picks up, that's when,
exactly,
like I was saying, the ghosts are most likely to show up.
Yeah. So. We just, as a matter of fact, Brad and I and our team just did an investigation about 3 weeks ago now at the local library here in town.
Right.
They called us in, and we were working with the spirit box there, and there's one session that comes through, and this is where, you know, all of a sudden you're like, all right, there's some legitimacy to this that I don't think we can just rule it out because it's scanning radio waves, and I use air quotes with that. But one of the responses was of a female's voice that lasted anywhere from 4 to 5 seconds. And anyone who knows how quickly the spirit box scans, if you got any type of consistent tone and voice over a 4 to 5 second span on the spirit box, that's scanning a ton of frequencies in that time. So when you get the same voice that covers that amount of time on the spirit box, that's intriguing.
Right, and I know exactly what you're talking about. There were times where it would be nearly a full-on sentence, just over and over, and I would scan it on the fastest that I could go every single time, and it got very weird. There was one spirit named Eddie who liked to talk most frequently over the spirit box and the Stanley, and I can still hear Eddie's voice to this day. We've got it on recordings and everything, and he has a very low, very recognizable tone, and for some reason, he really figured it out.
No.
And it's pretty bizarre, and you know, and I don't know how much you guys want to go into the stories of sort of the ghosts of the Stanley, but we had three spirits who most frequently would show up.
Well, I actually wanted to ask you that, Connor, if you could kind of give us the top, who is the resident ghost there? Who is like the king or the queen, and then all the other ghosts look up to this ghost? You know, who is the big one, and who are some of the more popular or more intriguing ones?
Sure. So there are three spirits who historically are said to be there, and then there's three that we ran into most frequently on our investigations. The three historical spirits would, of course, be Mr. and Mrs. Stanley, F.O. and Flora, and then also and Lord Dunraven was the other one. Lord Dunraven was the original landowner out there. And he, you know, by some accounts, I've heard other accounts that sort of dispute this, but he apparently wasn't the nicest guy. He was a land baron who attained a lot of that land in the Estes Valley sort of by less than legal means during, you know, when people were settling on that land. He would, you know, forge signatures or something like that to get it. But regardless, he sold the land to the hotel over to F.O. Stanley. And it's said that Lord Dunraven is still there, particularly up on the fourth floor, up in room 401. And then Mr. and Mrs. Stanley wander the grounds and keep in touch with everybody. That said, not to be a huge bummer here, but I don't think I ever came across Mr. Stanley in my time there. I've heard with people who say they've seen him, who've had experiences with him, so I can't totally discount him. I was hoping so bad that one day he would just come out and tip his hat to me or something, you know? Like, all right, we're doing the right thing. But Flora Stanley was very well known for her perfume. She had this rose oil perfume, and she would wear a lot of it, apparently. And there were times where, 7 or 8 times, you would just be sitting there and just get overwhelmed by this rosy scent, and then it would sort of fade away. She was relatively quiet in terms of actually interacting with us, but still intriguing. And then there's also other spirits that were there that would interact with us more frequently, and those ones were Lucy, Paul, and Eddie. Now, Lucy, we were told, was a runaway who was a teenage girl or maybe in her early 20s, and she took up residence down in one of the buildings at the bottom of the hill, the concert hall, on the grounds of the Stanley in the 1970s. And that is a time when the Stanley was going through a rough patch, and apparently some of the buildings weren't in the best state, so it's tough to say whether or not that actually happened, but it could have. And then she apparently was found, you know, living down in that basement of the concert hall. And, you know, they of course said, you know, I'm sorry, ma'am, we're going to have to leave. And she apparently left and was found frozen to death in the town of Estes Park later that winter.
Wow.
Now, it's a sad story. It could be true, like I said. Maybe she just fell through the cracks. But once again, we were given the opportunity to really look into the stories of this. And so, you know, you look up police records. We looked up, you know, death records and things like that. We could not find anyone named Lucy or a variation of the name who died from exposure in all of Larimer County in the 70s or the 80s. And then in addition, we talked with one of the daughters of the guy who owned the hotel in the 70s, and she said that the concert hall was never really boarded up, that they would host meetings in there. You know, you could have like your Rotary Club meeting or something like that for a small fee so they could raise some money that way. And so you think they would have known that there would have been somebody living there, but, you know, it's still possible. That said, there was, whether the story, her backstory is true or not, there's a spirit who absolutely sort of agreed to be Lucy for us, you know?
Really?
And she was so pleasant and nice and just had this high-pitched voice, and she would sing. We would hear humming sometimes. She liked to move things around. And she would show up when sort of the air was kind of giggly and full of laughter. And, you know, she was very interactive. I was very impressed with Lucy. And then we have Paul. Paul was the security guard slash maintenance guy from 1995 to 2005, so fairly recent. And he, from what I know, was apparently passed away from a heart attack while he was shoveling snow outside. And he is still there, in a sense, doing his job. He would, you know, if people were in buildings after hours, he would give them a little scare. We would hear keys jingling, his footsteps walking around, a big, sort of like a deep, gruff voice saying, leave, get out, time to go, things like that. But then again, he recognized Carl, Michelle, and myself. And so he would never do that to us. It was always through another person where it would be like, oh, you know, Paul. He would show up every now and then and maybe interact with us over a device or through recordings if we invited him to. You know, we'd have to catch him on his work break, I guess. but that was pretty bizarre. And then the third spirit is Eddie, who I mentioned. Eddie has an interesting backstory in that we don't really know his backstory. He just sort of showed up one day. Our best guess is that he might have been with somebody who went on one of our investigations and decided that he liked to chat and wanted to stick around. he first started appearing through smells, a really bad smell of body odor, which sounds kind of funny, but it was just hit us. And you know, the first time he appeared through that, you know, like we're sniffing each other, like what the heck is going on? And then
who did it? Who did it?
Right. And then after that, he started saying these words across devices like the Spirit Box, or we would do a lot of burst sessions on recordings, and it would be kind of scary words. You know, he would freak people out a little bit. The room would get a little bit heavier, a little bit darker, and there would be words like stab, blood, choke, kill, things like that. Oh. And it got to a point where Carl and I, and we're in a unique position where we're like, hey, you know, we've got to keep members of the public safe here. We want them to have a cool experience, but we sort of went in to the seemingly empty concert hall once, and we said, hey, you know, Eddie, you're kind of freaking some people out here. And then it sort of dawned on us, you know, maybe he's just trying to tell us about himself. And so we asked him that, and sort of after receiving some positive responses, it's like, well, maybe that's his backstory. Our best guess is that he might have been in a gang and might have been killed, something like that. But once we sort of confirmed that, he stopped using those scary words, and instead he just got kind of funny, honestly. He was sort of the trickster spirit. He would grab people on the leg or their shoe or on the behind sometimes, and he would give them a little bit of a jump, and then he would always call Carl bad words. It was just hilarious. He did not like Carl. And he's the one who most frequently would come through the Spirit Box. Very deep, very recognizable voice. It was just the strangest thing. But it was cool that we kind of got to know them. And then when the hotel closed up shop on formal paranormal events and investigations for now, on the last night we were there, you know, honestly, you get even a little emotional just thinking about it, but I held open the door a little bit longer than usual before I left, and I called out to the hotel, and I said, hey, if there are any spirits here, you're welcome to come with us, and we're going to try to continue this work. And so there's been a couple little strange things from each of us on the team that were a part of the Stanley that we've had happen where maybe, just maybe, Lucy and Eddie are hanging around with us, and they'll help us continue our work.
You know, and Connor, what you shared there is a perfect example of what you can do when you can investigate a place over and over and over again. For someone who would go in once and get words like stab, kill, bleed, they would leave there thinking, oh my God, there's a demon in there, you know, and then that would be right. Their experience. Mm-hmm. But with you guys, you got to work with it and figure things out and approach it from different angles, and we heard the end story. So that's just a testament to what it's like when investigators can actually have a location to work with over and over again.
And that's where I think the breakthroughs are really going to come from, is an opportunity like that. Yeah, you're exactly right.
Repetition.
Absolutely. Well, Connor Randall, we thank you so much, sir, for coming on in. And we really just scratched the surface. So let's make a promise here to each other that we'll get you back in. We'll dig a little bit deeper into the stories of the Stanley Hotel, the relationship with Stephen King. We got a whole nother chapter we can do here, Connor, if you'll come back inside again.
Absolutely. I would be so happy to. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
You bet.
Thank you.
Real quick, Connor, is there anywhere out there on the big World Wide Web people can follow along with you and what's going on? Do you have a website or anything like that?
Sure thing. The best way to get a hold of the work that we do in the paranormal is through our Facebook page. It's Spirit Investigations Team, and that is Carl, Michelle, and myself, and that's also where you can find videos that we made. We had Stanley vlogs where every week for a while we would post things that happened at the Stanley, and then we sort of made this into a web series, and it's called Spirits of the Stanley, and that's where we had our own episodes, and it gets pretty interesting. That's where you'll catch all the Spirit Box clips and things like that. We are also syndicated through this paranormal web content website called The Dark Zone. If you go to thedarkzone.tv and you sign up, it's Carl Pfeiffer's page. He's got all the Spirits of the Stanley episodes uploaded there, and also there, that's a place where you can catch work from other investigators. Patrick Doyle, Kristen Luman, Susan Slaughter, Dave Schrader has some content up there, and that's thedarkzone.tv. So we're still around, and we're not planning on going anywhere anytime soon. We're working on the next chapter for us. So, yeah.
Excellent. All right. Connor, keep up the great work out there, sir. Thank you for coming on inside. Connor Randall from the Stanley Hotel and sharing his personal life with us. Thanks for coming in, Connor. Inside the creaking door.
Thanks so much, dude.
You betcha. Powered by SlackJobPunks.com.
Now that's a drink I can sink my teeth into.
Get ready to enjoy the most unique cola experience you've ever had with Dead World Zombie Soda. With spine-tingling flavors like Orange Roamer, Goon Bitters,
Cherry Cola,
Brain Sap,
Cream Soda,
Grizzly Swill.
Great.
12 different flavors you won't forget from Dead World Zombie Soda. Check them out at deadworldzombiesoda.com to find out where you can stock up just in time for the zombie apocalypse. Dead World Zombie Soda. All natural for the unnatural. Don't be afraid to grab a cold one. Welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Tim Ellis and Brad Blair with you for our final segment of this episode. And once again, I want to thank Connor Randall for coming on in, Brad. And great guy. You've had great things to say about him. I've been looking forward to talking to him, and just a good guy.
Yeah, just their whole group out at the Stanley Hotel, all of the work they've done. And wow, we just scratched the surface.
Yeah.
And that was longer than our normal interview. That was a good 40 minutes. So.
And I guarantee if we would have touched on anything else, we probably easily could have done an hour with Connor.
Yeah, we'll definitely bring him back in the future. And like you said, we didn't touch on The Shining, the Stephen King aspect, and the stories that he had from, and there's other stories that I know from the Stanley Hotel that we did not hit on at all. So yeah, just kind of an introduction, but wow, what a great guy.
Very good guy, 2.5 years into the Creaking Door, and first time we've touched on the Stanley. Glad we did. Great storyline. And we'll talk more, as he said, probably around maybe Halloween we were thinking of having him in.
That seemed like a good time to hit on the Shining aspects on.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
All right. Time for that segment of the show where we do mailbag. This is a chance for the listeners to reach out to us and possibly be a part of the show as far as any questions you may have. And you can get a hold of us through our Facebook page. We're the only Creaking Door Paranormal Radio on there. Easy to find us. Go ahead and give us a like, follow along. And then you can send us any type of question you have. We've even said if you have any questions in regards to even recipes. Brad and I aren't very good cooks, but we'll help out in any way we can. And if you ask us a question that we don't know the answers to. Obviously, we don't know everything out there in the field of the paranormal. We'll do a little research for you. And that actually is exactly what we had to do here for this question today. Our question comes from Jake in Knoxville, Tennessee. He says, "Love the podcast, guys. Thanks for doing the show. But I have to admit, I'm more of a UFO fan. I've only found one show that you guys have done so far on UFOs. Yeah. Do you have any others?" It's kind of a two-part question here, so let's answer that one first. And I'm pretty the only one we've done so far is the one we did with Nancy DeTertre, which was a great interview.
That was the only specific that was strictly UFO. We did a little bit. If you go back and look, we did one with Greg Lawson that we talked a little bit about the Roswell crash and the evidence and evaluation.
That's right, yes.
If you haven't seen that one, I don't know that we necessarily have it logged as that. Mm. But if you look for author Greg Lawson on it, then we did hit on it a little bit with that. Yeah, Nancy DeTertre, that was one of those interviews where going into it, I was really at a loss. I didn't know anything about her. I had read the one book that her publisher sent us.
Right.
And I thought it was a great read.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a big fan of the title. I believe it was How to Talk to an Alien.
Which is going
to
turn a lot of people off.
But
once you get into it, it's, like you said, well-written.
Very well-written. Very intelligent lady.
Yes.
Great interview.
Yeah.
But the UFOs are not our forte.
Yes. We love them. We enjoy them. And sometimes we share a lot of the stories inside inside our opening segment mm-hmm. with Paranews.
But absolutely.
Yeah, we don't do a lot of research ourselves into mm-hmm.
them. You can only do so much, I guess. You know, it is something that's always fascinated me, to be honest.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we've always been more into the ghost and haunting side of things.
Yeah, we leave all the research up to MUFON and No Fork, so
yeah.
They can do all the work. And they actually helped us here in this next part of Jake's question. Jake also asked that he wants to put together a road trip to visit some top sightings for UFOs. Mm-hmm. So we had to do a little research for this one and found a report here from the National UFO Reporting Center, or NUFORC, and they basically put together the top 10 states in the United States for sightings.
Excellent.
So we thought this was pretty cool, so we'll go ahead and run down the top 10 for you. Coming in at number 10, North Carolina.
Really?
Came in at number 10. This was just reported in a year's time now, so
okay.
They had almost 2,500.
Wow.
In North Carolina. Coming in at number 9, our home state of Michigan, go Wolverines.
Woo.
Yes. Again, just below 2,500 for Michigan, coming in at number 9.
That doesn't surprise me, because we do hear a lot of reports mainly along the waterfront areas.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to find this very interesting, that all of these locations are pretty close to water. Coming in at number 8, Ohio.
Okay.
Again,
our
right.
neighbors to the south.
You bet. Number 7. This one's kind of right in the middle. This one, not a ton of water around it. Pennsylvania.
I thought you were going to say 7. Arizona.
No, not quite. They're number 6, though.
Okay.
Yes.
Look at that.
Yeah. Arizona came in at number 6, just over 3,000 sightings. New York, number 5, almost 4,000 for them. Just tipping the scales over 4,000, came into the number 4 spot was Texas for UFO sightings. And in at number 3, Washington State, just over 5,000. Number 2, Florida, almost 5,200. And California, blowing everyone out of the water, over 11,000 sightings for number 1.
Why does that not surprise me?
A lot of herbs out there.
Yeah.
So there you go, Jake. Take it for what it's worth. That was the report there from our friends out of the National UFO Reporting Center. And if you want to book your trip on that. Of course, you got to hit New Mexico.
Well, definitely.
There's no getting around that.
That's the granddaddy of them all.
You bet. And a lot of tourist attractions around that area, too, all dedicating themselves to Roswell and the UFO crash. Brad, any type of update we want to put on Michigan Paranormal Convention coming up in August?
Just said tickets are on sale. We did just release about a week ago now the extras, the add-ons.
Sure.
So you can book your galleries with Chip Coffey, Christy Robinette, and Tim Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
The Greg Lawson, funny, we just mentioned Greg.
Right.
Greg Lawson, who if you're not familiar with Greg, he's an author. He's also a detective in Austin, Texas area. He is doing a workshop on evaluating paranormal evidence. It's almost full. Last I checked, there were only a handful of seats remaining. So if that's something you're interested in, you can get on www.suesaintmarie.com or find it through a link on our Facebook page, and that'll hook you up. And that has everything that you need on there.
Yeah.
As far as tickets, the dinner, all of the side events are all to be found right there.
One-stop shop for
it. It is.
And if you haven't heard Greg speak, go back and find we've had him on a couple times, and he's just a great speaker, great presenter. And so if you're going to be a part of this event with him for his class, you're gonna love it.
His show on zombie advocacy that
one of my favorites
was one of mine as well. Yeah, he has a book out on zombie rights, so
yeah
go back, find
he's
Greg.
Very passionate about it.
He is, unfortunately.
So there you go, time is ticking away. We're already into the month of March, and before you know it, we'll be getting ready for the 8th annual Michigan Paranormal Convention coming up in August.
August 24th through 26th, and then you and I have some other events that we're still in the works on, and give a shout out to Ursula Bielski and the Chicago Ghost Conference, the 9th annual, which we will be presenting at this year, I believe the first weekend of October.
Correct. Very much looking forward to getting out there. We've been there a couple times as fans, mm-hmm. as purchasers. This time we get to go as presenters, so very much looking forward to that. Yeah. So keep tuned in right here to Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, our podcast, or follow us on Facebook and stay up with our adventures.
And Twitter.
And what's going on. And tweeter now. That's right. I keep forgetting we tweet now.
We do.
Again, thanks to Jake from Knoxville, Tennessee for this episode's mailbag. And don't forget, anyone can send us a mailbag question. Just find us on Facebook. Send it privately or put it on the main page. Doesn't matter. We will get to it. So once again, thank you everyone for coming on Inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. On behalf of all of our producers, co-host Brad Blair and myself, Tim Ellis, this has been the Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by SlackJawPunks.com.
The Creaking Door.